When we've got the machinery working properly, and so I'll just pop it up here. I've tested it, works there, no problem. So we talked earlier about, you know, the very I suppose initial, you clearly had some natural ability in drawings, and you said to me, you know, when you were at school, you left school, you didn't want to go to university or some other careers, and so you tell us about how the connection with the Lands and Survey Department developed.
I went there as a cadet, a drafting cadet, in the cartographic section, which was in Victoria Street in Wellington, and absolutely fell in love with it. These were the days when we still used pen and ink on handmade paper, and the sort of sense of creation, getting ink everywhere, going home with your nails filled with it, was quite fun.
Now, but how did you get into the Lands and Survey?
It was I can't remember. It was a cadetship. They took in every year half a dozen likely people. In all sorts of fields, there were a number of fields. It wasn't just cartography. It was
aerial photography or something.
No, the aviation stuff.
Oh yes.
The
White's aviation.
Yes.
Photographs and things.
Yes.
Yeah.
But aerial charts.
Yeah.
Navigation charts and things were covered by that, and then the topographic series that Lands and Survey did. So it instilled in me a sort of love of order, but also with a sense of whimsy, because that's what you can do when you're drawing by hand.
Mm. And that, I mean, you decided that it's at school, or there was an opportunity, I mean, were you advised regarding
it? I was advised by the
careers advisor at the school.
At the school.
Okay,
yes.
Great. You had a good one there.
Yes, I did. Mm-hmm. She was very efficient, mm-hmm. and she actually organised everything for me.
Mm-hmm.
And I remember her with great gratitude.
Mm-hmm. And so you were there in the Lands and Survey for how long?
Probably 1954. To 61.
Okay, so that was a good stint there, yeah.
Yes.
Now, turning to the archaeological connection, I mean, you were there at the full-time employed, or, you know, and yet you somehow managed to establish this archaeological connection.
Yes, a family friend. Was interested in surveying and had done for many years. He'd walked the Wellington coast and picked up.
Did you call it Beckett? Or
Peter Beckett.
Peter Beckett, yeah.
Thank you. And he was writing his summary of the finds that he'd made before that Raumati Pararam Waikanae coast was settled and it was empty, and he was writing a paper about this and had done some drawings, which I offered to Reem to do, and he kindly accepted my offer. This was my introduction to archaeological work, though I managed to turn most of it into maps. The illustrations are mostly of pumice tops.
All right, yes.
And ads or two.
Okay, yeah. So that was ultimately published in JPS?
In the JPS.
And this publication then, of course, I understand, led on to other things.
Well, Bruce...
Unplanned, but...
Well, totally. was getting the train from Pararam to Wellington every day. I was got in touch by Bruce Palmer, wanting to know if I'd be interested in joining the Wellington Archaeological Society, since I clearly had an interest in these things. I can't remember a lot of what happened then, but eventually I made contact with Susan Davis and John Daniels, John Pascoe, who was then head of the National Historic Places Trust. And things expand as they do, and there was then, I think, the first or second conference, it was the one that was held in Rotorua, that established the New Zealand Archaeological Society, mostly under the aegis of Jack Golson.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Yeah, no, Jack was very, very influential, of course, yeah, in establishing these societies. You mentioned some very, very prominent people there, or ultimately people that became very prominent in New Zealand archaeology. I mean, John Daniels, later became head of the Historic Places Trust in Wellington. Yes. Wellington, obviously, is, you know, sort of the capital and all sorts of things happening in terms of the government and things. And I think also the New Zealand Archaeological Association recording handbook, did you have anything to do with that?
There was the site recording scheme.
Site recording,
Jack was certainly instrumental in setting
yes.
up.
Yes.
Because he had a notion that things should be recorded. And for some reason, I was put in charge of it. Not the collecting of the material, but filing the material and being systematic. And it was in a couple of little cabinets initially.
Mm.
And so as stuff was sent in, I portioned it out and put it away somewhere. I have very few memories of this. It's something
mm-hmm.
that...
Mm-hmm. Well, you're working full time at the same time, and then you know, it's, the Archaeological Society was a totally volunteer thing, wasn't it?
Oh, indeed.
Yeah,
indeed.
Yeah,
which
yeah,
was why
yeah.
we all liked it.
Yeah, yeah, that's right. Did you participate in any excavations?
There was one run by Colin Smart somewhere out of Whanganui.
Okay. Mm-hmm.
And I think there was something at Rotorua, a very short one. I know we had an expedition somewhere, but I can't remember.
Yeah, yeah. I think in Rotorua there was the conference, and then a training excavation.
Yeah, I think that must.
Yeah,
been
yeah, yes. yeah. So John Daniel was there. I mean, John Daniels at the time was what was he doing? He wasn't involved in heritage as a profession then, was he?
No, not at that stage. I think he was just a public servant. Mm-hmm. Or he was either that or at university
mm-hmm.
still doing
yes.
his degree.
Yes.
And for the life of me, I can't remember what his degree was based on.
Yeah, yeah. But he was passionate about heritage. And,
yes.
And this archaeological association brought everyone together.
It did.
Yeah, yeah. Bruce Palmer was, I think, president for a period.
He probably was. He was still a teacher.
That's right. Yes, yes,
at
yes.
Teachers Training College.
Yes, yes.
And then I think he moved to Fiji.
That's right. Yes, ultimately, I think 1966 he got the job as director of the Fiji Museum, and so played a prominent role up there.
Yes.
And
so that when I did the illustrations for the Burkes book on their excavations of Singatoka, I think that he oversaw the publication of it. Then I don't recall.
But you were, by that stage, you were based at the ANU, is that right?
Yes, I was.
Yeah,
yes,
yeah,
yes,
yeah. Okay, well, I've got that down the list, but we will we'll get on to that. So, fond memories, I suppose, of the Wellington Archaeological Association and sort of getting those connections.
Yes, it was mostly weekend stuff, trotting around hillsides. And
yeah, so survey as well, yeah, excavation was really survey,
there
yeah.
There was a trip to Kapiti Island, which we got permission, and looking at, trying to find where Rapa House Pa
might have been. Oh, right, yeah, yeah, of course, yeah, 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 yeah.
We found some post holes. Then there was a rotting canoe on the lagoon. So that was a weekend where we
sort of did a
survey.
Oh,
and we may have stayed 3 or 4 nights.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
So there was John Daniels, Susan Davis, me, and a young man whose name I can't recollect, but
mm-hmm.
he certainly wasn't an archaeologist.
Mm-hmm.
He must have been a mate of Sue's.
So, but you were certainly in connection with, you know, all sorts of people. I mean, these names that, you know, are very early in New Zealand archaeology, you know, professionalisation of archaeology,
mm-hmm.
but also many of them that went on to, you know, have positions elsewhere and Yeah, Colin Smart, you mentioned, of course, yes. came here to do a PhD in New Caledonia.
Yes.
Janet Davidson, she was a bit...
She was younger.
Came a bit later.
She came a bit later.
Yeah.
So I had left by the time that she was working hard. But I spent a lot of time with Alistair Buist.
Oh, yes, in yes,
Taranaki.
Yes. All right.
I'd go up there for weekends and we'd trail around and map sites and things.
Okay, yeah, yeah. And of course, he was a remarkable enthusiast for the promotion and conservation of sites. I mean, and he was a medical doctor.
He was.
Full time, and any spare time was archaeology, it seemed to me.
Consumed by
it. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
His love of walking and looking at sites and thinking about them.
But it seems from what you're saying that, you know, I mean, you had a full-time job as well, but you were becoming increasingly consumed by the archaeology. I mean, you obviously had the, you know, the sort of mapping skills, but
well, it's relation to the physical relation to landscapes and things that I found so intriguing, I think. And how things were built.
Sure.
Relatively inhospitable.
That's right, and you get climate. A good idea of that when you're mapping things for hours. And
they're always up the most impenetrably steep, awfully steep hills.
Mm.
But one was young then.
Yeah, no, that's right. Yeah, and were you roped into by anyone else to produce illustrations for any publications of the New Zealand Archaeological
Society? Not that I can remember. No.
Yeah. So it was the
and Peter Becker by this time had died. I think he was in his 80s when I.
Okay. Yeah, no, we'll be able to track that article down. It'd be interesting to see. So that would you date that as your first published illustrations?
Yes.
Yeah, the Beckett article.
Yes, I've got a copy. You're very welcome.
Yeah, no, we can. Yeah, nowadays, of course, you can track it down on the web. But it's a great connection. And he was a family friend. Is that right?
Yes.
Yeah. Yeah.
He was a friend of my mother's sister.
Okay, and basically. You weren't terribly impressed by the drawings you saw, or you thought they could be improved.
I offered some improving remarks, undoubtedly, but offered to do some for him in the future.
Yeah, no, great. So the site recording handbook, which was the first NZAA publication, did you have any hand in that or any involvement in that?
I may have, but I don't.
Yeah.
One of the things that's disappeared from my memory, I'm afraid.
Yeah, well, unfortunately, I got a copy of it, of course, but it's now packed in the boxes. But that we can, you know, that'll, I dare say, participated or contributed, it'll be mentioned in there. But so that can be.
I can't remember it happening. But
Yeah. I think it was very, very early. I think it was 58 or something. You know, Roger was, I think it was Golson and Green, I think, wasn't it, an original publication? Yeah, because Roger, that was when Roger was there as a Fulbright, yeah.
Yes.
So you continued that lands and survey and continued your close involvement with the Wellington Archaeological Society until 61.
Yes.
And then you got the overseas itch, was that, you know, or it was... Pretty standard passage, wasn't it, for New Zealand?
It was. Yeah. One went home. I mean, Sue had gone back to England because she didn't want to be in New Zealand.
Yes. Now, you mentioned Sue Davis. We'll just go back to her just briefly because you said that, you know, she was English originally. Her family came out to Auckland.
Yes.
And she was a student of Golson's in Auckland and then came down to Wellington.
As assistant ethnologist. In the Dominion Museum.
Okay. Oh, yeah. Okay. So she was involved in things archaeological. As in an official capacity. Yeah.
I think, and she put a lot of work into the archaeological surveys around Wellington.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay. Yeah. No. Sure. Because
we did an excavation at Mana of the old fort was there.
Oh yes. Yes.
And she.
A European fort.
Yes.
Okay. Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
It would put up and. Immediately fell down in an earthquake. but John Pascoe had asked Susan to if she would excavate it and make some plans of the.
Okay. Now, so Pascoe was at the Wellington Museum.
He was in the National Historic Places Trust.
Oh right, no, sorry. Yeah. Okay, he was earlier than Daniels. Yeah, of course. Yes. Yeah. Okay. Yeah.
And I can't remember when he retired, but it was certainly in the time that I was before 1961. And I don't know who took it over after that.
No, because John Daniels...
Sometime later.
I did a little bit of research. He got the job in 1971. So there's obviously someone, maybe several people in between.
Yes.
The 61 you finished at the Lands and Survey and decided to embark on the overseas adventure. And did you end up in the UK?
Yes, in London, where I made contact with Susan and various other. And
She'd gone back already.
Yes.
Okay.
And she had got a job as a curator of the Saffron Walden Museum.
Okay. So she was doing well in the early 60s.
Yes.
Employment in the field. Yeah.
So it was, in summertime it was lovely, in wintertime it was excruciatingly cold.
Yes, I spent a few years in London excavating for the London Museum. As you say, it was nice in the summer, but brutal in the winter. Now, what employment, did you manage to get some sort of employment there?
I got a job with a private cartographer, a man, Gatterall, who had an office in Wealdstone, which is just out of Harrow.
All right. So where were you living?
In St John's Wood in London.
All right, yeah.
So it was a long train trip,
yeah.
But of course I was going in the way...
The opposite way to the commuters, so you were fine, yeah.
And that was okay.
Yeah,
but
yeah.
But the restrictions from unions against employing females
That
I couldn't ever be a mamme. I couldn't do the drawing work. I could be an editorial assistant.
Really?
No, I couldn't draw.
How incredible.
So that became exasperating.
No, totally. Yeah.
Wal
and Janet Ambrose, yeah.
And so our paths crossed. And then Wal devised this, or was asked by Roy Hodgson.
Who was at...
London School of something. I'm not quite sure where he was, I've forgotten it. But wherever it was that Wal was... studying.
He was at University of London, wasn't he? Yes. Yeah.
Was it the university or was it the... But anyway, Wal was doing a course in conservation.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah.
And...
So you saw them socially?
Yes.
Yeah.
And Wal suggested I might like to go to Switzerland to draw these... But, grave goods.
But he had been, Wal himself had been approached, because, you know, Wal is, you know, we know is a good illustrator as well, because he had the Lapita Sherds, I think the first publication is 1957, he drew some Lapita Sherds from their expedition to Tonga. So he was originally approached by Hodgson.
Yes.
Yeah, to draw.
And I think you'd have to confirm this with him, but that's my understanding.
Yeah. And
but of course, because he was busy and he could hardly leave Janet by herself.
Oh, yeah, because the drawing involved actually moving to Switzerland. Yeah.
And so he asked me if I would like to.
Mm-hmm. And you'd made connections with Wal and Janet, obviously, through the Archaeological Association in New Zealand. And so one thing led to another, and you were then lined up to do the drawings, and the drawings involved shifting to Bern, was it?
Yes.
Yeah.
And it was... Well, I mean, I had a room in a flat and ate out because it was very cheap and sat there in the museum and drew these extraordinary things. In the 60s, of course, you could just pick it up.
Yeah.
Spat on it.
Yeah. No, sure, yeah.
it wasn't done with contempt.
That's right. Yes, not to handle. Yeah, not kid gloves sort of thing.
No.
But you mentioned this contraption that Wall had designed. Did you use that in London or use that in?
I used it in Switzerland.
Okay.
Wall had taken it, but he'd gone over to start the project off.
Oh right, okay.
And
yeah.
Had done some drawings, which of course were superb.
Mm.
And he'd used it. He must have taken it there because I certainly didn't take it. It was quite substantial.
Yeah.
But it created an image of the object.
Mm. The outline, basically, yeah.
Pretty well.
Yeah. Okay.
And it was part of Wall's ingenuity.
Yeah.
And skill.
Legendary, yeah.
Actually made it, making it.
Yeah.
I have no idea what happened to it.
No, we'll try to have to catch up with them later today, and it sounds like a great story on its own, the contraption, because I know that he scans documents and particularly images, photographs. Of course, he's been a great archivist in terms of taking photographs. He constructed his own scanner, it continues on.
I mean, his skills are remarkable.
Yeah. You were in the drawing in Switzerland, and it got a bit.
The book was finished.
Oh right,
and
yeah.
I spent some time in London just assembling the pages. They were illustrations that were separate, I'm drawn on paper with ink, and then I assembled them into pages, and then it was printed by the Swiss, I think. And that was over. But the museum offered me more work. They thought
in Bern. Oh right, yeah. They got onto a good thing.
Well, I didn't have any prospects anywhere, so I stayed on. But then the cold and the lack of money.
So the contract they offered was a good opportunity, but the remuneration wasn't.
I mean, what spectacular. What future does one have in Europe?
Yeah.
And I began to dream of sunshine. So I wrote, I think, to Wall. I'm sure.
By that stage he had shifted.
Now back in Canberra.
Yeah.
Saying, is there a cartographic section at ANU that might employ my services? And Jack wrote back and said, well, I was thinking of appointing an illustrator. Would you like the job? I wrote back and said, yes. And the university paid my fare.
Oh, right, paid your fare from London. So this was, what, 1966? 66, you came.
November 1966.
You came out to...
Yes.
Yeah, serious sun in Canberra, of course. Well, almost too much, but
paradise.
Yeah. No, sure. Going from you were leaving the winter, of course. You're in the middle of winter by the time you left. So you came. I mean, you knew people here. You knew Wall. And had you ever met Jack before?
Yes, of course. I've known him quite well. Reasonably as well.
Yeah. Because he was running those training excavations at the Rotorua conference and things. Yes. Yeah. So
he saw him at in Wellington, the site for recording, or he would come down sometimes. And
And
so there was a contact.
Yeah, and he would have been aware of your illustration and mapping skills. So yeah, you knew people here, and it seemed like a wonderful opportunity. How did you find the department when you arrived here in 66?
It was such a contrast with Switzerland, where one bowed, shook hands, and nodded.
Oh, really?
And addressed one in proper terms. And here it was sandals, shorts, sunshine, chatter, openness. I think it was the sense that there wasn't a rigorous structure.
Yeah.
That it was.
But that's what was you found at the ANU
ANU was the same. The campus was open.
Mm.
There weren't all that many buildings on it.
Yeah.
It was beautifully landscaped.
Mm-hmm.
Although there'd been a drought, it was water, it was green, and there was a sense of freedom and certainty
that
was overwhelming.
Yeah.
Fell in love with it and have stayed in love with it ever since.
So who was in the department? You came in 66. So it was Jack, obviously, was running.
Jack and John Mulvaney.
All right, yeah.
All as a sort of technician.
Yeah, yeah.
Stroke photographer.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Carmel Schreier.
Oh, yes, Peter yes. White.
Oh, Jim Allen. Starving. Oh, I should have thought about this before.
No, that's fine. It was a very vibrant department. I mean, the Canberra was a great setting, the university was a great setting, but
Ron
the,
Lamford was there.
Oh, right, yeah, no, that's right, yeah, yeah. I mean, it was a great strategy, I think, or at least my interpretation anyway. You know, Jack could only employ, you know, a certain number of academics or no academics, one or two, but he was able to employ, you know, people like yourself, people like Wall, who under the title of technician, but in fact you could do it, you know, your research and as well. So you got a whole series of researchers under the titles of technician, as far as I can make out.
But it was, there was a sense of purpose about the place. It was really very exciting.
And so you came here to you know, as an illustrator.
Yes.
But your first sort of projects here in 66, 67 were where? Australia or New Guinea or...?
Australia. I think I was doing PhD drawings.
Oh, right. Peter White.
I think at that stage it was accepted that they would have their... a lot of the complicated stuff, things like stone tools.
Yeah, yeah.
Well, I hadn't really any idea about stone tools at all. It took me a while to get the hang of it. A learning experience
as well for you. Yeah. No, I remember even much later, I remember Matthew Spriggs saying to me that, you know, as a PhD student here, you had all these, you know, privileges really with people doing all sorts of work for you.
Yeah.
And even he said, you know, he had a research assistant for periods, and it was a very much, very very different to things nowadays. But I mean, yeah, a lot of things are. But we've just celebrated the 50th anniversary of the establishment of the Department of Prehistory as a standalone department. And I was intrigued to look at the early annual reports, and I think it's after the first year, the department, this is Jack writing the report, essentially targets three areas. I mean, three very big areas, or at least two of them, southeastern Australia, where he talked about sort of evidence of human occupation and activity and things to 30,000 years. There was New Guinea, and then the New Hebrides, which, obviously, having done worked in the New Hebrides, now Vanuatu myself, for a long, long time, it intrigued me more recently to see that very early on, that the New Hebrides was lined up as an area of interest.
Yes.
I think that report was 1970, and the first expedition there was 1972. Now, have you got any thoughts? I know the people that were obviously here on the ground were yourself. There was Norman MacArthur, Les Grube had arrived by that stage. Have you got any thoughts of why the New Hebrides might have been thought about in 1970? I mean, I know Graham Ward... I talked to Graham Ward briefly. He had been on Green's Southeast Solomons project, which started in 1970. But he didn't say that he'd, and obviously, Green and Golson, of course, would have been in regular communication and were keeping up with things. I know that Graham, he came later, or just a bit later, to start his PhD in the Banks Islands. Yeah. And that obviously connected with the Southeast Solomons and things. So, but I'm still intrigued that in 1970, you know, the New Hebrides was put down as a you know, an area that was going to be targeted by the Prehistory Department. Have you got any thoughts on that?
I have no idea.
Okay. Yeah. Yeah.
Because it didn't impinge on work that I was doing at all.
Yeah. Yeah.
Stuff. And it came as a surprise when Norma MacArthur appeared to do her second PhD. I didn't know her, and she was an august.
But Jack obviously knew her.
She to know her socially.
Yeah, yeah, because she was in the demography department.
Yes.
And, of course, she had supervised the census of the New Hebrides, the first census, yes, in 1967, I think that's published. So presumably she spent some time on the ground up there. I'm not sure.
She didn't talk about it much. She talked about New Caledonia a lot.
Oh, right, okay, yeah, yeah.
And
yeah.
Fiji.
Okay, yeah.
But I don't recall her talking so much about the New Hebrides.
So we have some photographs that Wall scanned that of yours. Well, I think they were enormous slides, because you feature in quite a few of them. Rather than her, but I mean,
yes, yes, I haven't got any photographs.
Yeah, okay, okay. So the team, I mean, we mentioned that the New Hebrides is essentially lined up as an area of interest in 1970, but it's not until 1972 that is the first expedition there.
Yes, well, from the department.
Yeah, from the department. Yeah, no, sure, yeah. This is the ANU connection and your connection, yes. And yes, of course, you know, Garanger and the Shuttlers had been there before. Yes. You know, the Shuttlers in the south and the Garanger in the central, yes, part of the archipelago. But can you talk a little bit about, you know, the lead up to this 1972 expedition? I mean, it was quite a big team.
It was 1972 she went with Les Groob. 73 was when several of us went.
Okay.
I was just rereading my copy of her thesis.
Oh, right, yes.
Which doesn't have any illustrations in it, so I can't remember places very well.
Yes.
I know what an item looks like.
Yeah.
My recollection of the place names is hazy. So 72, she and Les Groob went on a sort of reconnaissance.
Oh, yes, yeah, just to check the place out and see what. Yes. Yeah.
And for some reason, I was asked if I would like to go in 73. And what would one say but yes?
That's right, yeah. Well, because Canberra got cold in the winter, that's right.
I have no idea. But it puzzles me as to why I would have gone, except for the mapping.
The mapping, yeah, but I think, you know, I mean, what Groob was clearly stunned in many respects by the, you know, the extensive remains of the irrigated taro systems, which, yes, you know, he later dramatically described as the sort of Easter Island of Melanesian agriculture, which, you know, is an apt description. I mean, they are truly incredible. And, yes, of course, then Spriggs came later and did his PhD, yes, on them. But so, of course, mapping was a key. I mean, because photographing them and things is almost impossible.
Oh, covered with.
Yeah, and covered with growth, that's right. Yes. Yeah, and also, you know, Norma's PhD was to do with, you know, connecting the early historic records of depopulation with sites and things. So, you know, there was an element of mapping in that, obviously.
She chose an image because it was easy to determine what amount of ground had been cultivated because of the growth of this pit. And one assumes that those areas, and it was an attempt to assess how much land would have had to be used in order to accommodate feeding a known population.
Okay, so she was also tying in the agricultural systems,
yes,
with the population. With the population. Yeah, okay. So, yeah, obviously the mapping was a key. So
I think one of, as I said before, one of her things was that she was irritated by the assessments that some archaeologists were making that she felt were based on incorrect.
Yeah. Material. I mean, it's been a sensitive debate for some time. Of course, yeah, some historians and some archaeologists talk about this sort of fatal impact of European arrival, and she certainly kicked back on those sort of assumptions,
yes,
basically saying, as far as my reading is, that, you know, the most difficult part is actually, you know, how robust is the data?
Yes,
you can assume it, but can you actually demonstrate it, and rather than just assume it? And I think certainly when you read the census publication, you know, she talks at length about different estimates for populations in different places, but does identify, you know, 1967, that Initium has probably the best census data.
Yes.
So she, you know, she her second PhD, she targets that. And so you went with her and Les and...
It was Jack Gonson, Les, Graham Ward, Norma, and me.
Okay, so a big group to Initium initially.
Flew down, yes. Walked into the Unimage site in the most appalling conditions. But as
this Jack, was July, June, or...?
I think it's July.
Yeah.
I didn't note it down. It rained rather a lot, and Jack fell out of the boat that he and Norma and all the stuff had come round in, and got coral poisoning.
Mm.
So he was rendered almost unable to walk and had to be stretchered out.
Oh dear, really?
3 or 4 days' time. And as soon as all those blokes left, the sun came out. Norma and I got on with it.
So, yeah, I mean, Ward was essentially there because he was then heading up to the banks. Yeah, yes. Yeah.
And Les had come because that's what he did.
Yeah.
But he must have gone, I think, up to the banks with...
Yeah, no, he did, yeah. Because in 72, he does some digging on Initium and gets earlier dates, you know, deeply buried under this sort of slope wash associated with irrigated terraces. And then he also excavates on Pakeha Island in the banks and... you know, gets dates of 2,000 years ago and pottery and things. So I think, you know, he targeted those two places as potentially, you know, a good area for PhD students. So, any reminiscences of Initium itself? I mean, how did you get to Initium in those? Was it a plane or a ship? Oh, there was a plane, okay.
And I thought it was a seaplane, but Graham Ward assures me there was a landing strip there.
Yeah, I know the landing strip, that they started to get, they certainly in the, was it the 60s? The 60s, maybe slightly, no, I think it was the 60s, they, you know, they built airports on Tanna because they started encourage people to, for the volcano. And then the airport in Initium, maybe that was the 60s. Maybe it was there then. I mean, that I can easily check on that. But anyway, fairly basic accommodation, and everything was fairly basic on Initium in those days, I imagine. I mean, the population was small even then, and it's still small now.
Yes, it is. I don't recall any population at all.
Oh, really? Okay. No.
There were some. Norma employed some strong young men to carry all our stuff in.
Yes.
Which was a very small tent
and
a cooking area that they made for us.
I noticed one of the photographs that of the expedition that, you know, of course, very, very different to what we do fieldwork now, because there's populations, you stay in the village, you're very well looked after, you don't have to do your own cooking. So it makes life much easier. But clearly it was much more of an expedition, a serious expedition, you know, the canvas tents and the cookhouse. And
I think it was mostly tinned fish and rice.
Yeah.
It was our diet.
Yeah, wow. Yeah, yeah.
And, Well, how much can you carry in? I can't remember how long we stayed there, but it was some weeks.
Yeah.
And we explored quite a lot. But the undergrowth was serious.
Yeah, for sure.
There's a lot of clearing going on. I've got a set of slides that you're very welcome to have because I'm only going to throw them out.
All right, okay. great. You also recorded rock art.
Yes. It is my recollection that there was a very small site on the way back from Animich that we...
sort of carved into the rock.
Yes.
Yeah, yeah.
Then we got... because we had some days before the plane was going to come in, and I mean, there was no way of connecting or changing anything.
Yeah, no, sure, yeah.
Norma thought that we would go around to an anime?
Anime, yes, yes.
And look at the moon rock and the sun rock.
Because that's around the north of the island. Yes.
So...
because I think, yeah, because that had it been recorded by the missionary Gunn, I think, in an early, very early publication.
Yes, I can't remember. Of course, we didn't have any equipment for doing that.
Mm.
So I think I actually drew some chalk line, and to my shame, we didn't have any string or anything.
Yeah.
Drew some guidelines on with chalk.
Mm.
But we went around, I think it was a man called Daniel who took us around in his
dinghy. Because it's quite a mission otherwise. Yeah, you go over the top of the island I've walked around it. It was two nights, three days. But the locals can get around half the island and easily in a day.
Yes.
You don't want carrying gear and things, it would be different.
Yes. And so it's rather crude recording because I hadn't taken a lot of complicated drawing material with me and was probably running out of paper by this
time. Mm-hmm. And that was ultimately published with Matthew Spriggs, wasn't it?
I think so.
I saw a reference to a paper.
Yes.
At least one paper by you two on the rock art of Anitium.
Really?
Yeah. Well, probably a similar version in a different format, but...
she was extraordinarily generous and attributed all sorts of things to...
But did you... So Analgoat, you went to Analgoat, which is the old mission... Did you see the old mission, Geddy's old house, the old stone house that was there?
We did.
Not much of a few houses there, I imagine, in those days. Because I know that...
Yes.
A small village, basically. Yeah.
So we landed wherever it was that we landed, which must have been close to the woodcutters.
Because you... That's right, Artie Craft.
Artie Craft, yes.
A real character by all accounts.
Oh, he was very kind.
He took
pity on us and gave us food and things.
You'll be intrigued to know that we returned. It was my first visit to Anitium in 2012. We returned there to do some site prospection, and we were also interested in the mission sort of archaeology. We dug several test pits near Geddy's old house. Yeah. I thought there was a few depressions that maybe the rubbish pits or something.
Yeah.
We dug there, and would you believe it? We found a lepidosite under Geddy's house, essentially. Matthew was like stunned, of course, because he'd cored all over that platform and basically decided it wasn't there. But we've had a few field seasons in Analgoat and found quite extensive. I think it's a relatively short. Settlement, short-term settlement, but quite extensive. You know, right along the beach, you find once you realise that, you know, and it's right on the edge of the beach terrace. They're dumping rubbish down on the edge of the beach terrace, rather than the back further. It's almost completely sterile, so it's very, very specific, restricted area. But there it was. Yeah. So that was your only trip to the New Hebrides, 1973.
Yes.
Do you remember anything about Port Vila? Was it?
Oh, Mostly the restaurant.
Did you stay at the Rossi Hotel? Or?
I think so.
Yeah, yeah. It was the place to on the waterfront there, yeah.
I think we might have.
Yeah.
Suspect that Norma paid for this.
Yeah, yeah. Oh, well, most people who went through Vila stayed at the Rossi. There wasn't a whole lot of choice in accommodation in those days. But yeah, my understanding was that, you know, it was a very sort of quaint and attractive colonial town, with, of course, the French flavour and the restaurants and things.
I don't have a visual memory of it. I mean, I can remember the hotel and the harbour.
Yeah, yeah. It was a very basic place in the 70s. Yeah, yes. Well, but. You didn't work a lot with Les Groob. I mean, he was there essentially doing his own thing, and then
he just came with us and walked us along the coast and then disappeared.
Okay, yeah.
So we didn't work with him.
Yeah, yeah.
He developed a cold. He wasn't feeling very well.
Oh, right. Okay. Sort of, yeah, not in good form at that time.
Rained rather a lot on the waves.
Oh, right.
Sodden wet. but then it didn't. I don't recall it raining after that.
Yeah. I mean, the raining. It can be. My experience is it can be. You can rain into July, but by the end of July, it's pretty much over.
I think July, August, we were there. No, I remember looking up my passport, and we were away. We were there for about 6 weeks.
All right, yeah. Oh, that's a good stint.
Quite a long time.
Yeah.
But
yeah.
I don't remember it being a long time.
Yeah. Well, yeah, no, it is a long time. Yeah, but it goes quickly. Yeah.
Yes.
I mean, yeah, the supplies. I mean, there was an Australian guy, Bob Paul and Tanner, who had a trade store. I don't know whether you got any items from him. I know that.
I think everything was bought in. From Vila.
Oh, right, yeah. With you?
With us.
Oh, right, wow.
And I remember going shopping with Norman.
Mm.
And I think it was all stacked in the Norman Britain Islander.
Oh, yes. That's still flying in Vanuatu, would you believe?
Eek.
Eek, all right, yeah. yeah.
So all that food was carried up. And I think we just had one tent that we shared, and the cookhouse.
So you, I mean, you were doing mapping. Did you do excavation or
no?
That wasn't part of the Britain.
I don't think that was Norma's.
Yeah.
Was he just wanted surface remains, an idea of where people lived.
Yeah.
And how many lived there.
Yeah.
And what extent of gardens?
Yeah. But it was a major mission to actually clear the gardens to see. I mean, you can walk in amongst it and up and down and into the drains and things, but to actually clear it to a point where you could draw it, it must have been a major exercise.
Yes, I think it was. Yes.
Yeah.
The healthy young men.
Oh yeah. No, for sure. With the razor sharp bush knives.
Yes,
and,
indeed.
Yeah, indeed. Yeah.
I spent some time walking, doing a sort of rough sketch map of the river system.
Yes.
Because at that stage, it was before Norma had managed to latch on to photogrammetric stuff that she talks about in her thesis, where she got really sophisticated maps.
I've just got a couple of photographs that I just want to ask you about. You gave Wall that he scanned. I mean, this.
Oh, that's Switzerland.
Okay, great. Yeah. Cigarette in hand. That seemed to be the standard in this department as well, cigarette in hand.
I did give it away. That's Port Moresby.
Okay, that's
Moresby. Or that's. Not the island where Jim Allen was.
Okay. Motupuri.
Motupuri. Yeah. Yes, that's it. And that has to be the
department. I recognise it. Yeah. The heaters and
yes.
So we'll move. Yeah, we'll move. There we go. There's the wee airport.
Yes. So that's not an El Gahout.
This is another one. Yeah,
it is.
I'm quite surprised to see. I mean, arty craft would have been the thing of an Alouette. I mean, there wasn't much else there.
That's his.
Yeah, his establishment.
Yes.
there he is. There.
Yes.
Clearly, a man of many talents, if keeping that truck going. Oh. I mean. Because I know that I've got some archival shots of when the shuttlers were there, because they were there in the early, they were there, a good 10 years before.
Yeah. Yes.
And he was, of course, there, a major supporter of their work then.
And I think this is walking around, that's our camp.
This is the camp, that's sort of ANU canvas tent and the coconut leaf cookhouse. Yes.
Well, it didn't catch on fire.
just basic living must have taken up a lot of time, cooking.
I suppose it did. I did the cooking.
Because, nowadays, if you're where you go there, you're totally looked after. You don't need to worry about the cooking and you get
That's no fun. This is much more exciting.
And there you are at the camp, contemplating.
Yes.
Contemplating something rather.
Yes.
So you were using a Allardyce level?
Yes.
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 And there's the
clearing.
Two gentlemen, endless clearing going on.
Same thing.
And that you've been, you would have been aware, of course, Matthew's PhD, that he did huge clearing as well, but then sort of tried to reinvigorate the whole process of, because there was only, it had largely disappeared, the irrigated taro systems, and he got some funding to reinvigorate the whole thing, and a few old men still knew how to do it, and so they got all the younger ones and got the system going again to sort of teach them how it worked out, and they were very successful. They produced lots of taro, sat on the wharf waiting for the boat to come and pick it up, which never came. Yeah, because it was just them on the cusp of independence.
Yes.
So the wonderful co-op shipping system was essentially falling apart.
Yes.
And so they did that twice, I think, on the wharf. The taro's waiting there to go to Vila. So that was the end of that. But
disappointing.
This is some sort of
stone walls.
Yeah, stone walls, which is a very standard and 90M thing, of course. There's a river.
This is where we walked up to try and get some perspective of the valley.
Up the valley,
And there's several of these.
Yeah.
And these are the rivers.
Yeah. I mean, because the soils on a Anaitium aren't that rich, are they? I mean, it's that's the irrigated taro.
I think this is probably a Name.
Okay. Yeah. It looks like a Name.
It's the boat we came round in. Yes.
Now it looks as though you've shifted camp here, or is that a different place? There's a tent in amongst the coconut trees.
Well, I thought it was a Name. I've listed it.
You stayed in a Name.
I don't think we did.
But if you recorded the rock art, that would have taken a little bit of time, wouldn't it?
I think so.
Yeah.
Don't have any recollection of staying there.
But I can't imagine
we went up there and I recorded that, because it was quite a big. It's quite a big.
Yeah, well, if you you would have to have stayed at least one night, because you head off on the boat. That would have been a couple of hours.
It kept stopping. Yeah, the motor kept breaking down. Those of us who are not swimmers.
Are you a non-swimmer?
Yeah.
Goodness me.
New Zealander.
New Zealanders mostly swim, I thought, but that's ironic, because Matthew Spriggs is not a swimmer either, and he went to an item and almost drowned.
The headstone. We don't know whose it was.
Okay. So that's the slides that Wal gave me. But
that's the ones I've got here.
Okay, great. Yeah. So you came back here in 73, and you didn't. I mean, you obviously did some more illustrations and things for associated with the work, but. You didn't have an opportunity to go back again to...
No. And I don't think Norma did either, but I didn't know. And sadly, I broke my leg and wasn't able to do the drawings for her thesis.
You broke your leg here in Canberra?
Yeah. stupidly.
Mm.
So I was out of action for a while.
Oh, right.
So just at the time when she was submitting her thesis.
Oh.
So they're not my drawings.
Oh, right. Yeah, okay. Yeah, yeah. And then, I mean, I know that, you know, I mean, by the 1970s, of course, the focus for many people here was New Guinea.
Yes.
And then, you know, so really full on in New Guinea. Because, yes. And so, I don't know, but I suppose, you know, the New Hebrides connection still continued with Graham Ward, of course. Yes. He'd started in 74 or 73. I know, it must have been 73, because he went for a recce, and then, so, yeah. Yes. And Spriggs arrived at the ANU in 77, I think, and started the fieldwork in 78. Yes. So that, yeah, that sort of, particularly the Nightamese, but the New Hebrides connection continued. Mm. And still, you know, has continued right up till now. I mean, we've, you know...
Has it? So you continue it?
Well...
I mean, you'll be continuing.
Well, I'm getting to the end of my run, I think. But interestingly, when you look at the PhDs that have come out of the department, or even before the department, but associated with Jack's, you know, initial arrival here, and the department, and, you know, different manifestations of whatever it is now to today... 9 PhDs have come out of the New Hebrides, Vanuatu.
Okay.
So it was a good area to target, and it has been remarkable, really, because you know, because apart from New Guinea, which was, you know, much bigger place and much more resources, yes, and many, yes, more PhDs, yes, went there. You know, there's been you know, 2 PhDs in Fiji, 2 in Tonga, but Vanuatu, New Hebrides, 9. So it was you know, you set up a great foundation, Wynne, you know, those initial trips, so yeah, I think you may have other thoughts about different things, but I think we've done a pretty good coverage of, you know, from the Wellington Archaeological Society to the Southern New Hebrides. Yes. But you might want to add.
My recollection has faded, I feel, sadly.
Oh, well, that does for all of us. If you don't write things down and have photographs and things associated with the journal entry. I mean, nowadays, of course, you know, you can take hundreds of photographs. You can take photographs, you know, as you're walking along. I mean, and to jog the memory later on. But I mean, in those days,
it was hard work. If you didn't get the film developed, anything could have happened.
That's right. Yeah, yeah, and it was expensive, and it was sure. I remember when I first arrived here, it was still film, and you know, you took 5 or 6 rolls into the field, and you were careful with them, because you know, you never quite sure how they're going to turn out was the sad part. Of course, you got back and half them were no good, or you know, the light was no good or something. But and nowadays it's so much easier.
Yeah. Indeed.
Okay, Wynne, I think we'll wrap it up there. I want to thank you very much for coming in. I'm sure, I mean, at a later stage you'll think about all sorts of other things you could have mentioned, but we can get together at any other time in the future and continue.